Welcome to a Bow Valley Christian Church podcast. You are listening to Steve McMillan share a message titled, The Process of Faith, from the series titled, These Three Remain. This message was broadcasted live January 22nd, 2023.
We are looking at these three magnificent realities, faith, hope, and love. And this morning, we're focusing on the idea of faith and from the passage that was read for us. And when I think about faith, I think about that old story about the nun who was a medical missionary. Some of you might know this story. And she was traveling in her car when she ran out of gasoline right at the outskirts of a village. She didn't know what to do. She didn't have a gas can to go and get gas and to carry the gasoline. So she looked in the back of her trunk, and the only container that she had and she happened to have was a bedpan. Some of you don't know what a bedpan is. You will someday. And so this nun, she got the bedpan out of the back of her trunk, and she went into the little village. She filled the bedpan full of gasoline, and she carefully carried it back to the car, and she was pouring it into the gas tank when a priest drove by. And the priest slammed on his brakes, and in a cloud of dust, he rolled down his window, and he said, "Sister, you've got a lot more faith than I do." Well, I don't know how you feel about faith or how much you think that you have this morning, but as we read through Hebrews chapter 11, we see a lot of messages about faith. And this morning, we're just going to look at a couple of the verses with the creation story in the background that we find in Hebrews chapter 11. And as we read this chapter, and as we reflect on the word faith, the last week we kind of zoomed out and we said that faith does certain things. It creates a vision. It tells stories. But this morning I actually want to, instead of the big picture, I want to zoom in on the details of the word faith. And I think it was Martin Luther, and of course he did it in Latin as Martin Luther would, who came up with sort of three angles on faith. And as theologians and preachers throughout since Martin Luther have thought about it, they've come up with these sort of words. Now, these are my words for the concepts that faith exists through. Or you could call it three levels that exist in faith. You could call it the process of faith. And basically, faith, when you think about it, it's not necessarily as mysterious as sometimes we think, but it has these angles to it or these layers to it. One is understanding, which is basically you're thinking things through, and then it leads to conviction, and faith always completes itself with commitment or with action. And so this is the process of faith, and they're all kind of layered upon each other, and they're not clear distinctions all of the time. But everything that we do, this is what I want you to understand this morning as we step into this, that everything that we do, all of the things that we know, everything that we learn is actually tied to this faith process. And I don't mean just religious things. Somebody said that the exception is mathematics. I wouldn't know because I don't understand mathematics, but I have a friend who does math in, I can't remember what dimension, it's some multiple dimension he does math in, and he says faith is required for mathematics as well. But basically it goes like this: faith development actually affects everything that we do as human beings. And I want to show you this. Let me just take the angle of four illustrations. So imagine that you need to have surgery. How do you find a surgeon to do your surgery? Or imagine if you're going to get married, how do you choose a spouse? What is the process of that? Or a third example would be, how do you find a mechanic for a car? If you need your car fixed, how do you find the right auto mechanic? Or maybe another example of this would be, how do you find someone to join your team or join your staff? How do you make that decision? How do you do those things? Essentially, you do those things and many other things all in the same way. And here's what happens. So let's just run an example through these. Say that you're going to have surgery and you need to choose a surgeon. What do you do? Well, you start off, you think about it. You look for some understanding. It's sort of a rational process, right? You think, okay, I got this cert. I need this kind of person. You get recommendations, somebody else who had that surgery, who is a good surgeon for that, where should I go to learn some things about it. You sort of sort through the evidence. You look at all the competing claims. Maybe you Google it. You do some research. You basically ask yourself the question, who is the best doctor for me in this situation? In other words, it's you use your brain. You think. It's a rational process as best you can. You check things out. You give it some thought. You do some reasoning. You don't just leap to a conclusion. You think about it. Right? With me so far? You're thinking about it. Okay, so now you're thinking about it. You find it. You go through all the stuff. You find somebody. But there's a point in which you have to come to the next part of the process, and that is you don't just think about who's the best surgeon for me. Now you got to make a decision. Something's got to happen, right? You go on this process, you got to come to the point where you decide on a certain doctor. And you decide, hey, this doctor is the right doctor for me, or this is the right mechanic for me, or this is the right team member for me. You've reasoned it out. You've looked at all the references. You've thought about it. You've looked at lots of evidence for this doctor, all the other surgeries that he's done. People are still doing well. You do it all, and finally you go out and you make a decision. Right? And do you make that? You make that decision based on a probability. You can't know for sure yet, but you have a conviction. You've made a decision. So faith, this is how faith works in just about everything in life. You do some reasoning, and then you come to the point where you have a conviction. You make a decision, but faith is never complete without the last part. You make a commitment, which means you, what I mean by that is you make yourself vulnerable, okay? You put yourself on the table, so to speak. That's commitment. You let them put that thing over your mouth and count down. You make yourself utterly vulnerable. You make a decision based on on the best reason that you have, but it's still probability. You've made this decision, but now you've got to make a commitment. You got to lay down with the scalpel coming your direction. Okay? You with me so far? You got to rest in the decision you made. You got to live out the decision you've made. And only after you've gone through this process, only after you've rested in that decision, or you've lived out that decision, or you've acted on that decision, can you actually know for certain whether that was the right doctor, right? You have to put yourself in the hands of the doctor. You have to put your hands in your life in the hands of your fiance, or you have to actually get married. And only after you've done that are you certain. And this is the process of faith. Now, as time goes by and you walk through these levels of faith, you can come to a place of certainty. But basically, you reason, but you can't ever know anything for sure simply by reason. You have to come to reason and then a decision or a conviction, and then you have to commit. You have to live it out. You have to stick with it. You have to kind of put your money where your mouth is, and then you can come to certainty. And this is the way that we make decisions about just about everything, right? Now, it'd be nice if we could just think our way into certainty, but it doesn't work. It doesn't work. That's not the way it works. In fact, this might be meddling. There's a reason that some people don't get married, because they want to reason their way to certainty and then make a commitment. But it doesn't work like that. They want to be absolutely sure. They want to think their way into certainty. And they don't want to reason into probability and then commit to certainty. They don't want to admit that there's no way to know anything except through faith. And that faith has these three aspects. Well, that's the concepts that, as far as I know, trace back to Martin Luther. And the point for us this morning is this. Faith, as we talk about it, is not just for religious people. It's not. You are using faith all the time. You are putting your faith in things all of the time. Did you drink water this morning from the Calgary tap? Listen, that's an act of faith, right? Now, for us who are in this room and those who are watching online, we have confidence because we have one of our elders who works at the water treatment plant, and so he's told me the water is good, and so I drink it, and he gives me that look of disappointment whenever he sees me with a bottled water from somewhere else, because the taps here are good. What? You drink water this morning? It was by faith, right? It was by probability. Everything we do, everything from looking for a mechanic to your car to deciding big things like what your career is going to be or who your spouse is going to be, or the very big things like how you decide what is right and wrong and how you decide what is meaning in life, all of those things are a faith process. So some people, sometimes they say to, I've heard people say this to me, they say something like, well, you have faith, I can see that it's good for you, Jesus is really good for you, and isn't that nice, it's just faith is not for me. Well, they're mistaken. The difference between a Christian and a non-Christian is not that Christians have faith and non-Christians don't have faith. The difference between a Christian and a non-Christian is not whether they have faith. The difference is, where are you putting the faith that you have? What are you building your life upon, would be Jesus' way to say it. What are you building your life upon? So, let me just push this a little bit. If there's instability, if there's unhappiness, if there's incredible anxiety in your life, it's probably because you're putting your faith in a place that is insecure or unstable. So, for a lot of us, myself included, this is what happens. We feel anxious. We feel unhappy. Why? Because we're building on something, or we're investing on something, or we're committed to something, or we're convicted about something that is not secure. It comes and goes. It might be feelings. And how are you ever supposed to decide what is right and wrong, or what is the meaning in your life, if the place in which you put your faith is insecure and unstable? And so, when we come to this topic, I just want you to see that this is not like some religious, esoteric idea. This is all the time, all of our lives. You've done dozens of things by faith already this morning. So let's look at Hebrews chapter 11 through this lens, and I think we can find these three angles in the first few verses. And so Hebrews chapter 11, and we'll look at these verses 1-3, and then also verse 6. So now faith is the substance, we looked at this last week, of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. And through their faith, the people in days of old earned a good reputation. Well, let's just pause on that one, because the first point here is that faith, somehow, in their faith, is the substance of things, it's a conviction of things, we already see the word conviction, and it results in some action. They did something that earned a good reputation. And then he kind of gives some details of this, and he says, by faith, we understand that the entire universe was formed at the word of God, and we read through Genesis this morning, that what we now see did not come from anything that can be seen. So you could put it this way, by faith, we do understand certain things. We think them through. And the writer here in the book of Hebrews is going to start here in verse 3, and he's going to end sort of at the end of the world, at partway through verse 12. But he starts at the beginning of the world with creation, that the entire universe was formed by the word of God. And when the word, you see the word understand there, by faith we understand. The word there is using your brain, using your reason, rationalizing things out. It means to conclude from the evidence. By faith, we conclude from the evidence that the entire universe was formed at the hand of God. And so when you look at creation, and you and I look at creation, we look at the world and we say that there is a reason behind it. That if we look at creation, if we use our minds, we are pointed towards God. That everything is not just a molecular collision that somehow is driven by the survival of fittest. We look at creation and say, that proposition, that theory does not make sense. That theory does not make rational sense. And so what do? We look at creation and we think about what actually is real in how we live our lives. So if we are just a bunch, as some of us are taught in school, just bacteria sort of collided and ended up with us. If that is the case, that doesn't explain everything. It doesn't explain, for example, why it's almost universally across all of humanity, this understanding that genocide is wrong. Survival of the fittest does not explain all of that. There's no basis for that. It doesn't explain, if we're just a collision of atoms, it doesn't explain how almost all of us know that there is a difference between compassion and violence. If there is no God, if it's all random, if it's all chemical, it doesn't explain life on this earth. And so the foundation of faith is to think it through. Think about creation. Faith, I kind of downplay the role of intellect. But faith is not anti-intellectual. You don't turn your brain off. But the truth is that when we think about the creation and we think about God, it sometimes hurts our brain, doesn't it? Put it this way. God is uncaused. He's always existed. Does your brain hurt? This is challenging because how do we study anything? This is what science does. Science examines causes. So if God has always existed, he's uncaused, how do you explain him? We can't explain him like we explain everything else, which causes a lot of people to reject the idea of God because God won't play by our rules. And there might be some of you that are listening or watching online this morning, and you've sort of given up on the idea of God. And you're not willing to do this. You're not really to understand that God created it all. But I hope that if that's you this morning, you are at least honest enough to admit that if you give up on the idea of God, you also give up on a lot of other things. For example, if we are just highly evolved lumps of carbon, then you need to give up on the idea that there's any moral standard that everyone should observe. You need to give up on the idea that longing for justice matters. Because if there's no standard, what's justice? And yes, you can have what you feel is moral, and you can have what you feel is the right and what is wrong, but you can't tell anybody else what that is. If survival of the fittest is the only rule in this world, if you give that up, then you give up a lot of things. You give up justice. You also give up that there's meaning in life, that there's purpose in life. Listen, it's completely irrational to think if all we are is matter, that any of us actually matter. If all we are is matter, none of us matter. The universe could care less if that's the case, whether you exist or whether you exist or whether you don't. And that's not being cynical. That's actually is reasonable deduction if there's no God. And so let me just put it this way. Believing in God or not believing in God, either way, you're acting on faith. That you cannot empirically prove that God does not exist, but you have to come to this point where, well, let me put it this way. Any discussion of origins enters into the realm of faith. But scriptures tell us, the Bible tells us, that we have good reason to affirm that the world was created at the hand of God. It's an example of believing something we didn't see. None of us were there to create it, but what we do see is incredible design. We see incredible order. And that is why thousands of scientists believe in God. Not because science led them away from faith, but because science led them to faith. So we are the people who believe. Let me put it another way. We are the people who believe by faith that God stepped out on nothing and that God spoke to nothing. And nothing heard his voice. And when he started speaking, nothing showed up and turned into something. In the beginning, what did God do? We believe that God spoke. He spoke. And the sun and the moon stood at attention. And the sun blazed and became one of millions of suns. And our galaxy arrived and became one of hundreds of thousands of galaxies, and planets were invisibly tethered to suns and roared around them through space at breakneck speeds. And stars, they blazed with heat that could melt our planet in a second. He spoke, and canyons were carved. And he spoke, and oceans were dug. And mountains erupted out of flatlands, and stars were flung, and universes sparkled. And he spoke again, and the grass began to jump. And the lilies and the roses and the daffodils began to carpet the earth. And the earth started to rush out water, and fish and whales started to swim in the sea. And he spoke, and the flowers didn't just grow, the flowers blossomed. And the chicks weren't just born, they were hatched. And the salmon didn't just swim, they leaped. And he spoke, and the trees started to clap, they waved their hands. And he spoke again, and the birds started to sing, and they started to fly, and they started to flap. And on he went, and he spoke, and he gave clouds their puff. He gave oceans their blue. He gave trees their sway. He gave frogs their leap and their croak. Do you see? Nature is God's workshop. The sky is his resume. The universe is like his calling card. You want to know who God is? See what he has done. And then get this. When he spoke again, using that same breath that he created everything else, he breathed it into his lungs, and in his image, he made you, and he made you. Do you see? Pure truth and beauty and goodness. So God is not asking us to believe in him because there's no evidence. He's asking us to look at the light of his creation and understand. Well, maybe you're thinking right now, okay, Steve, well, talking about the reality of God and God creating things. You know, I came to church this morning. I plowed through the snow. I'm looking for something a little bit more tangible. I'm in pain. My life hurts. Things aren't going well. I need something practical. I got some relationships that really I need some help with. I need something, some strength. I don't just need to be talking about the existence of God. Let me ask you a question, because I think this is so crucial. How in the world are you ever going to make a decision about how to make decisions in life if you think that you're an accident? If you don't know whether you're an accident or whether you are the plan of a personal God, you will not be able to make decisions that will help you in your moments of pain. If you're an accident, if God didn't create you, you can't make a single move without reflecting that. So Christianity calls you to think some things through. It's not for lazy minds. It's not. Do you want to know how to make decisions about how to face suffering or pain or deal with relationships? You can either make those decisions based on the fact that God did not create us and that you were an accident, or you can make those decisions based on the fact that there is a God, and by faith that you believe it and you place your faith in it, and then you can live by faith and hope and love. Your understandings of how this world began completely shape how you face the things that come at you in this world. It's that relevant. And so the Hebrew writer is saying, by faith we understand, we think it through. We think it through. But it doesn't just stop there. We don't just stop with thinking through and reasoning. I see that there probably is a God. We also get to the point where we make a decision. Right? You got to pick a spouse. You got to pick an auto mechanic. You got to pick a surgeon. Now, faith is the substance of things we hope for. It's the conviction of things that we haven't seen. Well, what haven't we seen? We haven't seen what took place in the past. We weren't there. Living by faith means I'm convicted of it. They're not in front of me, but I believe them. So we are the people who believe that there is a God, that life doesn't make sense just as a naturalistic, non-supernatural existence. Faith is an understanding and a conviction. It's deciding to get married. It's choosing your surgeon. It's making a choice that God is who he says he is, that he is the creator and I'm not, that he is God and I'm not, that he's the king and I'm not, that he's the ruler of the universe and I'm not, that he is who he says that he is. So faith is rational, but then it makes a decision that if God created everything, then he is creator. Then he is who he says that he is. And if he is creator, then he is, and this is where the rub comes, then he is the authority. Right? And Jesus is the authority. Now, we've talked about this before, so I'll do this quick. In our time in history, we have almost completely given up on authority. There's just so many bad examples. right? Whether it's politicians or pastors or leaders or teachers or principals or CEOs, they have just disappointed us over and over again. In fact, we live in a culture, last week we talked about being an imminent frame, where actually in our culture right now, we don't want any authority in our lives, right? What do we prefer? We prefer authenticity. We've exchanged authority in our lives for being authentic. You be you. You be yourself. You be your own authority. You be who you were meant to be. And so the big value in our world now, and there's lots of value to authenticity, but that is the big value as opposed to any sense of authority. So we've had this massive erosion of trust in all of our authorities, whether they're politicians or bosses or whoever. And so what have we done? We've instead turned to being authentic and finding the authority within ourselves. But listen to me. The conviction of Christian people has always been, the early Christians had this battle cry. They had this announcement when they saw each other. Their announcement was not even God loves you. Their announcement was not be yourself. The announcement was not you're okay, I'm okay. The announcement to each other, the place that you knew that the early Christians were Christians, was by this mantra, Jesus is Lord. Amen. That was their mantra. It was a place of authority. So the message of the gospel in 2023 includes the idea of authority. That Jesus is Lord, that God is who he says that he is. That he gets to decide, that he is the king. That he can decide the meaning of my life, he can decide my identity, he can decide morality. And so when creation came into existence, God spoke and all of creation obeyed. Nothingness obeyed him. Do you see? When Jesus came as the Word, Jesus went throughout this life and everything. What are the things that obeyed Jesus? What are the things that bowed down to him? Nature bowed down to him. And he turned to the storm and he said, peace be still. What else bowed to him, down to him? Who did? Demons. Yeah, get out of here, he'd say to the demons. And they were gone. They were in the pigs. What else did Jesus have authority over? Animals. Sickness. At a very molecular level, Jesus had authority over sickness. Do you see? What else? Somebody said it back here. Death. He had authority over death. Lazarus. And he had to use Lazarus's name or everyone would have come out. He says, Lazarus, come out. And he comes out of the grave, right? He says to the little girl, rise up. And she's no longer dead. Do you see? He had all this authority. Why? Because everything knows that he's the Lord. So here we are today. And maybe the question for your faith is, Are you convinced that he is who he says he is? You say, yeah, Steve, I'm convinced. That's why I'm here. I'm at church. Well, let me push this a little bit, and I'm warning you right now, you might want to pull your toes back because I'm going to step on them if I can. Let me give you a test. If Jesus is Lord, what does that look like? What is that like? So if you give yourself a 5, that means he's absolutely in control. He is the authority by faith. What he says goes. A 0 would be the opposite of that. Okay? I'll just give you 3 or 4 or 5 categories, and you just give yourself a rating here, okay? You don't have to announce it. You don't have to. Look at your own work here. How about this area? In your speech, is Jesus Lord? How about this one? Money, finances. Well, some of it, he's Lord of some of it. I'm meddling now, aren't I, Greg? How about this one? What about your sexuality? You're thinking about it or acting upon it? What about your time? Is Jesus Lord of that? One more. What about your relationships? Where would you put that? Listen, we live in a world where if you are like me, and I found this little test to be so convicting that I had to share my conviction. So if you feel a little convicted, I do too. But we live in a world where we are, I feel like anyways, I am constantly being pulled to be my own authority. I even feel like that's right and proper. Do you see? But the message of faith is that there is an authority outside of us. And if you're convicted about who God is, that he is who he says he is, then you have something outside of yourself. And friends, this is incredibly good news. It's incredibly good news. Why? Because you don't have to find your identity within yourself. Have you ever wondered, who am I? I don't even know what I want. Have you ever felt that? Somebody's like, go find yourself. Well, if I try, you know, I look down deep inside of me, who am I? There isn't one thing. I thought of this the other day when Deb and Daryl brought over chocolate cake and ice cream. Listen, do I want to lose weight or do I want to eat another piece of that chocolate cake? Well, let me think about it. Go all the way down. Do I want to lose weight? Right about here. Do I want to lose weight? What? What? I want both. I want to lose weight and I want to eat that cake. Do you see the struggle? It's way too much weight for you to put your identity in your own hands. And the good news of the gospel is this, that if there's authority outside of yourself, if you claim that Jesus is Lord, then you can also listen to him speak to you and say, here's who you are. You are my beloved child. You're my daughter. You're my son. That's who you are. You do not have to wander through this life wondering what your identity is. It's been given to you from outside. We're killing young people by putting this incredible pressure on them that they have to come up with their own identity. It's too much weight for the human soul. Identity is given to us by our Creator. Let me push this even further. The good news of the gospel right now is that at this time in history, if there's an authority outside of you that you trust, that you are convicted about, then that authority, if you can say Jesus is Lord, then that authority will speak to you and give you meaning and significance. And that's what we're longing for. Listen, sometimes I look at the world, if I look at the mall and it just goes through, it's like everybody walking through the mall is trying to say, do I matter? If I dress like this, will I matter? If I perform like this, will I matter? If I tell these jokes, will I matter? If I sleep with this person, then will I be significant? Will I matter? If I get this degree, if I get this amount of money, will I matter? The good news of the gospel, friends, you need to understand this. It's not up to you. There's an authority outside of yourself that went to a cross 2,000 years ago to declare forever, you matter. Yes. You matter. You matter so much that the Creator gave the life of his Son for you out of love. That's your significance. That's your meaning. That's good news. And listen, do you want direction for your life? We all do. I was thinking this morning, just as I was walking up here, if we could testify, everybody in here could tell stories about how they took life into their own hands and they were zero on this inventory and they took matters into their own hands. They took their speech and their finances and their hurts and their sexuality into their own hands and decided they were their own authority and they could get up here and say, just like that many of you have said to me, I so blew it. I was not equipped to handle those temptations. I was not equipped. I made a mess of everything when I tried to be the authority. Listen, the good news is there is direction for your life by the one who created you. And so it's not as if morality is something some kind of legalistic God throws at us. It's the gift of the authority you can trust to say, this is how life best works. The good news of the gospel is found when you realize there's an authority outside of yourself. And friends, the word authority does not play well in our culture right now. And maybe that's why. Okay, I'm way off my notes now. This is why, in our time in history, I think we need more than ever the message of God where he says, listen, every other authority in your life has used their power for their own gain. Politicians, for lots of us parents, bosses use their authority for their own gain, right? You can think of somebody right now who leveraged their power for their gain and probably for your detriment. It's evident that we live in a time in history where trust has eroded. And perhaps that's why we need to come together every week and remind ourselves of what God has done. God is the only authority that when he had ultimate authority, what did he do? He didn't leverage it for himself. He became one of us. Do you see? He lowered himself when he had authority. And what did Jesus do in John chapter 13 when he says, all authority, I've got it all. All authority has been given to me. What did he do at that exact moment to prove to us that we can trust him? He took off his coat, picked up an apron, and started to wash some feet. And what did the ultimate authority, the creator of the universe, do so that you could trust him? He went to a cross and he gave up his life for you. He gave up his authority. He leveraged his authority for your sake. Why? So that you can trust him. In a world where you can't trust anyone else, where every other authority has messed you up and you're cynical of them and you doubt them, into that steps the message of the gospel and says, listen, you can trust them. You can trust him. You can trust him to give you meaning. You can trust him with your speech and finances and your sexuality. You can trust him when he says that you matter, because he's proven to be a leader like nothing else you've ever encountered. I have no idea where I am here. Well, thirdly, I guess that's where I am. Finally, we understand. We are convicted, but it doesn't just end there. It always moves into commitment or into action. I like how the message puts the first couple verses. The fundamental fact of existence is that this trust in God, this faith, is the firm foundation under everything that makes life worth living. It's our handle on what we can't see. And then this, the act of faith is what distinguished our ancestors, set them above the crowd. That there's a point at which people who have reasoned out the probability of God have actually said, yes, he is who he says he is. I'm convinced of it. It will naturally flow into your actions and your lifestyle and will flow into the stories of faith that Hebrews 11 is filled with. We're the people who have thought it out, what it means to believe. We're the people who have been convinced that God is who he says that he is. And then we are the people who commit and say, now I'm going to live my life in line with that. Let me ask you this. Where are you at this morning? Maybe you're just thinking about it. You're trying to understand, is there a God? There's a lot of people who are... It's several in this congregation who have really thought this through on sort of a understanding why believing in God is actually something that is extremely reasonable thing to do. Maybe you just are at the point this morning where you're like, yep, okay, fine. I realize I've placed my faith in a lot of other things, a lot of other people, a lot of other ideas, maybe other institutions. And maybe you just need to think through, where are you placing your faith? Because you're putting it somewhere. Maybe you're putting it in your marriage or your ability or your youth or your looks or your influence, whatever it is. Maybe you're thinking things through, just trying to understand if there's a God. For some of us, and this was me for a while, some of us can get stuck there though. But there's a date for your surgery. And at some point you need to move on. I just want to encourage you. If you've been thinking about it for a long time, you're never going to think your way. You're never going to be able to intellectually think your way to certainty. Faith always follows this process. You have to make a decision. And maybe that's you. Maybe this morning you're just, yeah, I believe that there's a God, but you've never really decided You've never really been convicted that he is who he says he is. And you can tell because you got zeros on the test, so to speak. Or maybe this morning, you just need the encouragement to live it, to live your faith story. You know there's a God. You know Jesus is Lord. And now you know what you need to do, and your spirit has even been convicting you this morning. You know you need to live it out, put it into action. Well, the passage gives us one final encouragement, and I know that was kind of a little heavier this morning, but the final encouragement is this. It is impossible to please God without faith. Anyone who wants to come to him must believe that God exists. And then this line, which I take great hope from, that he rewards those who earnestly or sincerely seek him. And maybe that's where you're at this morning. You just need to, maybe you need to flip the test, and maybe, this doesn't sound quite right, but maybe you need to put Hebrews 11:6 to the test. And maybe you're watching, or you're watching this 5 months down the road sometime. And maybe what you need to do is just ask God to reveal himself. He honors that. Here's a prayer that when I struggle with that whole faith process that I pray, and I could tell you some stories of responses, but it's simply this. God, if you're real, make yourself real to me. And I don't mean like manipulating God or something like that, or trying to make a bargain, but just awaken in me what's missing. Maybe that's what you need to do this morning. You're like, Steve, I'm not sure about all that authority stuff. Okay. But would you just pray this? Try it. Try it for 30 days. God, if you're real, would you make yourself real? Seek him. He rewards those who do. Let's pray together.